You should have been warned. A Mergen eats a diet of rare grasses only. And now the High King of the Mabden is perished. A mere carcass of mutton. No matter.
That must be the Foy Miore on the march. They move so much faster than I thought possible.
But Gofannon cocked his head to one side and listened almost curiously. Then from both sides, the green-faced horsemen began to bear down on them. Horam whirled his war axe and made a great wound in the neck of the first horse. Seeing greenish, viscous liquid ooze from the gash, it halted the horse's momentum, but it did not kill it. Its green eyes rolled, and its green rider brought a dull iron sword down at Coram's head. Coram knew how to counter such blows. He chopped deliberately at the wrist, and wrist and sword flew earthward, like a bough lopped from a tree. He chopped next at the horse's legs, so that it crashed onto the dusty clay, and lay there, unsuccessfully trying to regain an upright position. This helped to confuse the next rider who came at Coram, and was unable to strike a clean blow without snaring his horse's legs in those of the wounded animal. The scent of pines was now almost overpowering as the sap oozed from the wounds Coram had.
I once loved that scent, and now it sickens me.
Gofannon had brought at least three of the pine folk down and was chopping at their bodies, slicing off limbs so that they could not move, though they still lived, their green eyes glaring, their green lips snarling. These had once been the flower of Mabden warriors, probably from Kaerlud itself, but the human blood had been drawn from their veins and pine sap poured into them instead, and now they served the Foy Miore. Although they were ashamed of what they had become, they were at the same time most proud of their distinction. As he fought, Coram tried to glance around him.
Gofannon, do you see any means of escaping from the gorge?
No! Taylor has chosen the best place to attack. Where the sides are steepest and the passage narrowest.
So we can defend ourselves a little longer, but never hope to get away.
Eventually, they would be overwhelmed by the people of the pines, vanquished by these living trees, these brothers of the oak's oldest enemy. Like a marching forest, they rushed again at the one-eyed Vardach with the silver hand, at the eight-foot she with the bristling black beard. And Gaynor, at a safe distance, laughed on. He was indulging in his favorite sport, the destruction of heroes, the conquest of honor, the extermination of virtue and idealism. And he indulged himself thus because he had never quite succeeded in driving these qualities from his own self. Thus, Gaynor sought to still any voice which dared remind him of the hope he dared not hope, the ambition he feared to entertain, the possibility of his own salvation. Coram's arms grew weary, and he staggered now as he chopped at green arms, slashed at green heads, cracked the skulls of green horses, and grew dizzy with the scent of the pine sap, which was now sticky underfoot.
Farewell, Gofannon. It heartened me much when you joined our cause, but I fear your decision has led you to your death. Gofannon?
Coram tried to peer through the mass of green warriors to the far end of the pass, where he had last seen Gaynor, but there was no sign of the flickering, fiery armor.
It seems that Prince Gaynor the Damned has deserted the scene of his triumph.
And now the warriors of the pines were falling back, looking fearfully into the sky. And Coram risked glancing up, and he saw a rider there. The rider was seated upon a shining black horse, all dressed in red and gilded leather, the buckles of its harness of sea ivory, and the edges all stitched with large and distinct of the pines came the fresh, warm smell of the sea. And Coram knew that the smell came from the smiling rider, who sat astride the horse with one hand upon his hip, and the other upon his bridle. And then casually, the rider stepped his horse over the gorge and turned so that he could look down into the pass from the other side. It gave Coram some idea of the size of horse and rider. The rider had a light golden beard, and his face was that of a youth of some 18 summers. His golden hair was braided and hung down his chest. He wore a breastplate which was fashioned from some kind of bronze and decorated with motifs of the sun and of ships, as well as whales and fish and sea serpents. Upon the rider's great fair-skinned arms were bands of gold whose patterns matched those on the breastplate. He wore a blue cloak with a great circular pin at the left shoulder. His eyes were a clear, piercing green-gray. At his hip was a heavy sword, which was probably longer than Coram's full height. On his left arm was a shield of the same glowing bronze as his breastplate. And Gofanon was looking delightedly up to the gigantic rider on the gigantic horse, even as he continued to fight the people of the Pines.
I heard you coming, brother! I heard you! And I know who it was!
Greetings, little Gofanon. You fight well. You always fought well.
Do you come to aid us?
It seems so. My rest was disturbed by the Foimiare vermin laying ice across my ocean. For years I've been at peace in my underwater retreat, thinking to have no more irritation from the cold folk. But they came with their ice and their mist and their silly soldiers, and so I must attempt to teach them a lesson.
Almost carelessly, he drew his great sword from its scabbard, and with the flat reached down to the gorge to sweep away the Brothers of the Pines, so that they began to retreat in panic in both directions.
I'll meet you at the far end of this pass. I fear I will get stuck if I try to join you there.
Come, Coram!
They trudged up to the larger end of the gorge to meet him, and Gofanon, in spite of his weariness, ran forward with his arms wide open, the axe falling from his grip.
Ah! Ilbrek! Ilbrek, son of my old friend! Ho, ho, ho! I did not know you lived!
Little smith, if I had known that you survived, I should long since have sought you out.
Coram was astonished to see the she Gofanon seized in Ilbrek's great arms and embraced. Then Ilbrek turned his attention upon Coram.
Smaller and smaller, eh? Who is this who resembles our ancient Vada cousins?
Vada he is, brother Ilbrek, a champion of the Mabden since the she left.
Coram felt ridiculously tiny as he bowed to the great laughing youth.
Greetings to you, cousin.
And how fared your father, the great Mananan? I heard that he had been slain in the islands of the west, and lies now beneath his own hill.
Aye, and with a Mabden folk named for him. He has honour in this realm.
And deservedly, Ilbrek.
The Tuhanna Mananan!
Are there more of our folk surviving? I had thought myself the last.
None to my knowledge.
And how many Foimiare are there?
6. There were 7, but the Black Bull of Crenanus took one before it departed this realm, or died. I know not which. The Black Bull was the last of the great she herd.
6.
Ilbrek sat himself down upon the turf, his golden brow darkening.
What are their names, these 6?
One is Kerenos, another is Balar, another is Rannan, and another is Goim. The other 2 I do not know.
Neither have I seen them. They hide, as usual, in their mist.
Kerenos with his dogs, Balar with his eye, Rannan with his breath, and Goim. Oh, Goim with her teeth. An unsavory quartet, huh? And hard to fight, those 4 alone. They were 4 the most powerful. Doubtless it is why they linger on. I should have thought them all rotted and forgotten by now. They have vitality, these Foimiore.
The vitality of chaos and old night. If only all our comrades were with us. What a reaving then, eh? And if those comrades wielded the weapons of light, how we should drive back the coldness and the darkness.
But we are 2, and the greatest of the she are no more.
Yet the Mabden are courageous. They have a certain power, and if their high king can be restored to them...
True.
Gofanon began to tell his old friend of all that had passed in recent months, since the coming of the Foimiore to the islands of the Mabden. Only when he spoke of Kaliton and the wizard's charm did he become reticent, but managed to speak of the matter nonetheless.
So, the golden oak and the silver ram still exist. My father spoke of them, and Fand the Beautiful. She prophesied that one day they would give power to the Mabden. My mother Fan was a great seeress, for all she had weakness in other directions. Now I suppose we must make speed for Kaer Garan here, and see what defenses they can build, and how best we can help them when the Foimiore attack. Do you think all 6 Foimiore ride against that city?
It is possible, yet usually the Foimiore do not move in front of their vassals, but bring up the rear. They are cunning in some ways, those Foimiore.
and they were ever that. Would you ride with me, Vadach?
If your horse agrees that he will not mistake me for a flea upon his back, I'll ride with you, Ilbrek.
And Ilbrek swung Coram up and sat him down so that he could place a leg either side of his great pearl-studded pommel. Still unused to the hugeness of the she, Coram felt weak in the presence of Ilbrek in his great leather breeches.
I understand at last how Gofanon can regard himself as a dwarf.
Onward, splendid mane, to where the Mabden gather.
And as soon as he had become used to the huge movements of the horse, Coram began to enjoy the sensation of riding the beast, listening to the conversation of the two she, as Gofanon continued his steady pace beside the horse.
Seems to me that my father bequeathed a chest to me containing some armor and a spear or two. Perhaps they will be useful in this struggle of ours, though they have lain unused for many scores of years now. If I could find that chest, I would know.
Yellow shaft and red javelin. The sword your father named Retaliator.
Most of his arms were lost in the last battle, as you know, and others were of a sort which drew their strength from our original realm, and thus could not be used properly, or could only be used once. Nonetheless, there could be something of use in that chest. It is in one of the sea caverns I have not visited since that battle. For all I know, it is gone, or rotted, or been devoured by some sea monster.
Well, we shall know soon enough. And if Retaliator should be there...
We'd be best advised to consider our own abilities, rather than put our faith in weapons which might not even exist in this realm any longer. Even with them, the strength of the Foimiora is greater than ours.
But added to the Mabden's strength, it could be great indeed.
I have always liked the Mabden, though I am not sure I share your faith in its powers. Still, times change and so do races. I will give you my judgment of the Mabden when I have seen them do battle against the Foimiora.
That opportunity should come quite soon.
Coram pointed ahead. He had seen the towers of Kaia Garenhir, and they were tall, those towers, rivaling the buildings of Kaia Lud in size and outshining them in beauty. Towers of shining limestone and dark-veined obsidian from which banners flew. Towers surrounded by the battlements of a massive wall which spoke of invincible strength. Yet Coram knew that impression of strength was deceptive. Balar's horrid eye could crack that granite and destroy all who sheltered behind it.
Even with the giant Ilbrek as an ally, we will be hard put to resist the forces of the Foimiori.
As large as Kaia Garenhir was, Ilbrek was still able to leap his horse over the battlements.
Kaia Garenhir, ready yourselves! We ride for the main hall. Gather yourselves and tell your king there is urgent business at hand. I am glad they show such enthusiasm for our cause.
Aye, it shall be light work to rally the forces of Kaer Garen here.
Since Gofanon was not able to leap the battlements himself, Ilbrek's horse brought them to the main hall faster than even Gofanon could run. Ilbrek gently plucked Coram from the saddle and set him down on the street outside the main hall.
The people of the city are very strange indeed.
They seemed more than pleased to support our cause.
Long live Prince Gwyn and his bride.
I do not believe it is our cause that brings them cheer.
Where is your king? Kaer Garenhir is under dire threat.
Why?
The Foimiore march for Kaer Garenhir.
Oh,
he can barely stand, let alone get his face out of his mead cup.
Ilbrek managed to squeeze himself into the hall and crouched behind Coram and Gofanon. Half of King Daffin's war knights were sprawled insensible beside benches covered with stained samite. The other half leaned on anything which would give them support, while some sat with mouths hanging open, staring at Ilbrek. They had been celebrating the marriage of the king's son, Prince Gwyn, to the daughter of a great knight of Kaia Garenhir.
They are not prepared for war! They are prepared for nothing but a drunken slumber now.
King Daffin's face was red with drink. He was a fat, intelligent-looking man, but his eyes held little intelligence at that moment.
King Daffin! The Foimiore march in strength against you, King Daffin. Many hundreds of warriors, and most hard to slay they are.
I fear you overpraised the Mabden, Prince Coram. We must do what we can without them.
Wait!
King Daffin came unsteadily down the steps from his throne, Meadhorn still in his hand.
Are we to be slain in our cups?
It seems so, King Daffin.
Drunk. Slain without dignity by those who slew our brothers of the East?
Just so. And you deserve little better.
King Daffin fingered the great medallion of rank which he wore about his neck.
I shall have failed my people.
Listen again.
I...
King Daffin made a considerable effort to understand, even throwing away the mead horn.
The Foy Miore march for Kaer Garen here. They bring all their minions with them. The High King bade us seek the Golden Oak and the Silver Ram. But Foy Miore will destroy everything to prevent that, starting with Kaer Garen here.
How many hours are they from Kaer Garen here?
Perhaps three. We traveled rapidly. Perhaps four or five. Perhaps they will not attack at all until the morning.
But 3 hours. We have 3 hours for certain.
I think so.
Rise! Gather the warriors and prepare for battle! The Foy Miore march!
I begin to despair, Gofannon.
This would not do at all.
Ilbrek began to squeeze himself back through the doors.
Not at all.
King Daffin! This is
we
not...
We must defend Kaer Garen here! The Foy Miore march! Wake up!
King Daffin was fighting with his own disinclination to hear bad news on such a day as this.
Do not abandon them, Ilbrek! You see them at their worst!
But the huge black horse, Splendid Mane, had already leapt the battlements of Kaer Garenhir's walls.
So he has gone. Plainly he feels he would best save his strength for a better cause. I cannot say that I blame him.
He is headstrong, like his father. But his father would not have left friends behind.
You wish to go too?
No, I'll stay. I've told you my decision. We are lucky to be here and not fallen to the Pine Folk. We should be grateful that Ilbrek saved our lives once.
Aye.
Wake up! Wake up! The Foy Miore come!
They stood blinking upon the battlements, their eyes red, their hands shaking, and they made much use of the water skins which the young lads brought round. Some were still in their formal wedding finery, and others had donned armor. Now they sighed and groaned and held their heads as they looked out from the walls of Kaer Garenhir and waited for the enemy. Suddenly, one of the boys lowered his water skin and pointed.
Yonder! I see a cloud of boiling mist on the far horizon!
Aye, that is the Foy Miore, but many come ahead of them. Look. Look lower. See the riders.
It seemed for a moment that a green tidal wave washed towards Kaer Garenhir.
What is that, Prince Corum?
It is the people of the Pines, and they are exceptionally hard to slay.
The mist moved towards us, but now it has paused.
Aye, that is how the Foy Miore always fight, sending their vassals to weaken us first.
Corum looked along the battlements. Corum turned away in grim despair. Other warriors were coming up the stone stairways now, knocking arrows to long bows.
At least these warriors, it appears, did not celebrate the marriage of Prince Gawain with quite the same abandon as the knights.
Aye.
They wore shining shirts of bronze mail, and there were bronze war caps upon their dark red heads. Some wore leather breeches, and others had mail leggings. As well as the quivers on their backs, they had javelins, and there were swords or axes at their belts. Corum's spirits lifted a little as he saw these soldiers, but they soon dropped again.
No matter how bravely or how well we fight this day, the Foy Miore remain. And the Foy Miore have the means of destroying all within Kaer Garenhir's splendid walls.
Now came the pale green horses and pale green riders, all of the same shade, with pale green clothing and pale green swords in pale green hands. The riders spread out as they approached the walls, circling to find the weakest parts of the defenses before they closed in. And the sweet, nauseating smell of the pines drifted closer on the wind. And that same wind brought a chill which made all who stood upon the battlements shiver. King Daffin raised his long sword high.
Archers, let fly!
And a wave of arrows met the wave of green riders, and had no more effect upon them than if the archers had shot their shafts into so many trees. Faces, bodies, limbs were struck, horses were struck, and the people of the Pines did not waver.
Father!
A young knight in a long samite robe, over which had hastily been thrown a mail surcoat, was buckling a sword about his waist. He was a handsome youth, his brown hair unbound, his feet bare, his dark eyes dazed and puzzled.
Father, I'm here.
And that must be Prince Gawain, less drunk than his fellows.
He has the most to lose this day, for he must have come straight from his marriage bed.
Now Coram saw fire flickering in the distance.
Ah, Gaynor has come to war.
At the head of his Golek infantry, Gaynor the Damned lifted up his faceless helm as if he sought Coram amongst the defenders, his yellow plume dancing and his naked sword glowing sometimes silver, sometimes scarlet, sometimes gold and sometimes blue, the eight-arrowed sign of chaos pulsing on his breastplate, his strange armor glowing with as many different colors as his sword. Gaynor's tall horse pranced before the white-faced Golek infantry. Coram saw red, bestial eyes gleaming in a thousand faces. And yet still there seemed to be more fire, fire burning on the fringes of the Foimiore mist.
Is this some new form of enemy I have not yet encountered, Gofanon?
I do not know, Coram.
The people of the Pines were driving closer, and from their mouths came the laughter. Coram had heard such laughter before when he fought Hugh Argic, and he feared it.
They now realize fully that they face the supernatural.
As long as each man controls his terror as best he can and prepares to stand against the brothers to the trees.
Every single arrow found its target, and now virtually every pine warrior rode forward with a red-fletched arrow protruding from his heart. The warriors rode slowly and relentlessly forward. Some bristled with arrows, a few had javelins sticking completely through them. But their blank faces grinned blank grins, and their cold eyes remained fixed upon the defenders. They had reached the foot of the walls. The people of the Pines began to take on the appearance of strange, sharp-spined animals, so many arrows quivered in their bodies, and then they began to climb the walls. They climbed as if they needed no hand or footholds at all. They climbed as ivy climbed, green tendrils moving up the walls towards the defenders. One or two of the knights fell back, unable to accept this sight.
I hardly blame them.
And the first of the pale green warriors, eyes still fixed, grins still rigid, reached the battlements and began to attempt to climb over. Coram's war axe flashed in the sunlight, and its blade smashed the head completely from the first warrior he saw. That warrior he pushed backward, and it fell, but immediately another appeared, and Coram's axe again struck off the head. Green sap spouted from the neck and clung to the blade of the axe, spattered across the stones of the battlements as he drew back his arms to strike again at the next head. The people of the Pines swarmed up the walls in apparently inexhaustible numbers.
They will most likely tire soon, or parts of the defenses will weaken, and I will be attacked from both sides.
But Coram did what he could. There came a momentary pause when Coram was able to look beyond the Pine Warriors and see Gaynor ordering his Golek forward. They carried great logs in leathern harnesses which swung between them.
Gofanon, look!
They will try to batter down the gates of the city!
Mavdan are not used to fighting sieges. I can think of no way they can resist the battering rams.
What? Why?
The Mavdan have fought hand to hand for centuries, each man picking another from the ranks of his enemies. Many tribes do not even fight to kill. And while I believe this to be a Mabdan's strength...
In any fight with Foimiore forces, it is a great weakness.
King Daffin, prepare your people for the appearance of the Golek in the streets.
But King Daffin was kneeling, his face gleaming with tears, beside the body of one whom a pine warrior had just slain. The body was dressed in white samite and a mail coat.
Prince Gawain would not be returning to his marriage bed.
A pine warrior ran along the battlements towards Coram. Coram swung the axe low and chopped the pine warrior at the waist so that the torso toppled from the legs as a tree might topple. For moments, the warrior continued to live, the legs moving forward, the arms waving from where the torso lay upon the flagstones. Then it died and turned brown almost immediately.
My boy!
Do not weep for your son, King Daffin! Avenge him! Fight on, King Daffin, or you and your folk are surely lost.
Fight on? Why? What I live for has died. and we shall all die soon, Prince Coram. Why not now? I care not how I perish.
For love and for beauty, for those things must you fight, for courage and pride.
But even as Coram spoke such words, they rang hollow as he looked upon the corpse of the youth, and he saw the tears spring again into the eyes of the youth's father. He turned away.
They have begun to batter the gates.
On the battlements, pine warriors were now almost as thick as the defenders. Gofannon could be seen, his huge bulk rising above a mass of the people of the pines, his double-bladed axe swinging with the regularity of a pendulum as it chopped and chopped at the tree folk. There seemed to be a song on Gofannon's lips, almost a dirge as he fought, and Coram caught some of the words.
I have been in the place where was slain Gwendolay, the son of Caedau, the Pillar of Songs, when the raven screamed over blood. I have been in the place where Bran was killed, the son of Iwerith of far-extending fame, when the ravens of the battlefield screamed. I have been in the place where Lahai was slain, the son of Urtu extolled in songs, when the ravens screamed over blood. I have been in the place where Murrig was killed, the son of Corain of honorable fame, where the raven screamed over flesh. I have been where the soldiers of the Mabden were slain, from the east to the south, how bravely they fought, where the ravens blackened the sky.
That is Gofannon's death song.
I have been to the graves of the Vada and the Shi, from the east to the west. United they fought, now the ravens are screaming for me!
The position upon the battlements is all but lost.
To the hall, Gofannon! Fall back to the hall!
Gofannon looked at Coram with calm eyes.
Very well. My song is ended.
Everyone, fall back to the hall!
Together they were fighting all the way, the people of the pines crowding in on all sides, fixed grins, fixed eyes, sword arms rising and falling. The knights and warriors who survived followed Coram's example. Two knights escorted King Daffin.
My boy.
They all barely made the street as the timbers of the gates burst and the brass shod battering ram smashed through. At length they reached the king's hall and drew the great brass doors closed, barring them. The signs of festivity were still everywhere about the hall. There were even a few too drunk to be roused.
They will probably die without realizing what happened.
Brands guttered, jeweled flags drooped. Coram and Gofannon peered through the narrow windows.
Gaynor is there, riding at the head of his half-dead army, the sign of chaos glowing upon his chest.
He will most likely concentrate his attack upon the hall.
So hopefully the people of the city will be reasonably safe for a while at least.
The Golech behind Gaynor. They still carry their battering rams.
And still the Foy Miore have not moved forward. I wonder if they will advance at all.
They must know that Gaynor, the Golech, and the people of the Pines can accomplish the defeat of Caer Garanir without their help.
Even if by hard fighting the Foy Miore vassals could be vanquished, the Foy Miore cannot be.
Pale green faces began to appear at the windows, and stained glass smashed as the people of the pines attempted to gain entrance to the hall.
Ready yourselves, men!
Again, the knights and warriors of the Tuhan Agwidhane Garanhir ran to defend themselves against the inhuman invaders. Swords of notched and shining iron met the pale green swords of the pine warriors, and the fight continued, while outside, the battering rams began to pound on the bronze doors of the hall. While the fight raged, King Daffin sat upon his throne, his head upon his hands, and wept for the death of Prince Gawain, taking no interest in how the battle progressed. Coram ran to where at least 10 of the Pine Warriors bore down on two of King Daffin's war knights. His axe was blunted now, and his fleshly hand was sore and bleeding. If it had not been for his silver hand, he might long since have been forced to drop the weapon. As it was, his arms were weary as he lifted the double-bladed axe to chop at the neck of a pine warrior who was about to slide his sword into the unprotected side of a tall knight, already engaged with two more of the pine folk. Several of the pine warriors came at Coram then, and Coram took first one step backward, and then another, as they pressed him towards the far wall of the hall. Elsewhere, Gofannon was engaged with three of the warriors and unable to help Coram. The Monarch Prince swung the axe back and forth, up and down, and swords ripped his byrnie and found his flesh. He began to draw blood from a dozen shallow wounds. Then Coram felt the stones of the wall behind him.
I can retreat no further.
Above him, a brand flickered, casting his shadow over the bodies of the pine folk as, grinning, they moved to finish him. A sword bit into the haft of his axe. Desperately, he wrenched the weapon free to strike at the one who held the sword, a warrior who had been handsome, but whose face was now pierced by three red-fletched arrows. He struck the axe deep in the skull, splitting it. Green gore spouted. The warrior fell, but he took the axe head and part of the haft with him. Coram turned and leapt for the ledge above his head, getting his balance and drawing his sword, steadying himself with his silver hand by clinging to the bracket in which the brand flared. The pine warriors began to move up the wall towards him. He kicked one back, chopped at another with his sword. But they were clutching at his feet now, still grinning, cold eyes still staring. Desperately, he released his grip upon the bracket and seized the brand, plunging it into the face of the nearest warrior. For the first time, a pine warrior yelled in pain, and his face began to burn, the sap sizzling from the wounds he had already received, but which had not appeared to harm him. The other pine warriors began to fall away in panic, avoiding their blazing comrade as he ran about the hall, until at last he fell over the remains of another of his kind. The brown body caught too and began to burn.
Get brands! Fire will destroy them! Take the torches from the walls!
Coram saw that the bronze doors of the hall were bulging now and could not last much longer before the onslaught of the Golek battering rams. Now all who could still move were springing to the torches and tearing them down, turning them upon their enemies, and soon the hall was full of cloudy smoke, smoke which choked Coram and the others, sweet, pine-scented smoke. The people of the pines began to retreat, trying to reach the windows, but the war knights of the Tuhan Aguidhne Garanhir stopped them, thrusting the brands into their bodies and making them fall upon the bloody flagstones as they burned. And then there were no more people of the pines, only grey ash and smoke and a sweet, nauseating stink. Here and there, the jeweled flags had caught and were beginning to smolder. Elsewhere, wooden beams were burning. But the defenders ignored them as they massed near the front of the hall and waited for the Golek to come. And this time, each surviving warrior, including Coram and the battered she-smith Gofannon, had a brand in his hand. Light began to show through as the doors were beaten out of shape.
I could see Gaynor through the gap, directing the work of the Golek.
One of the bars snapped and flew across the hall to land at the feet of the king, who still wept in his throne at the far end. The door tilted and began to swing inward.
Now!
The Golek paused in surprise as a wedge of men came running towards them from the smoky gloom of the hall at Kaia Garanhir, brands in their left hands, swords or axes in their right hands, moving to attack. Gaynor's black horse reared, and the damned prince almost dropped his glowing sword in astonishment as he saw the battle-weary, smoke-blackened, tattered force led by the Varach Coram and the she Gofannon rushing at him.
What? What? Some still live?
Coram ran straight for Gaynor, but still Gaynor refused to do combat with him, turning the rearing horse and seeking to cut a path through his own Golek half-dead so that he might escape.
Come back, Gaynor! Fight me! Fight me, Gaynor!
I shall not return to Limbo, not while the prospect of death awaits me in this realm.
You forget that the Foy Miore are already dying. What if you outlive them? What if they perish and the world is renewed?
That cannot happen, Coram. Their poison spread and are permanent. You fight for nothing, you see?
Then Gaynor had gone, and the Golek, with their cutlasses and their knives, were lumbering forward, nervous of the brand fire, for fire had no place in the Foy Miore lands. Though the Golek did not burn as the people of the pines had burned, they feared the flames heartily and were loath to move forward, particularly now that Gaynor had retreated and could be seen in the distance turning his horse to watch the fray from safety. The Golek outnumbered the survivors of Garanhir by more than 10-1, yet the war knights and the warriors were forcing them backward, hacking and stabbing at the half-dead warriors, shoving the brands deep into their faces so that they put up their hands to ward away the flames.
They retreat! They retreat! See how they retreat, Coram!
You no longer sing your own death song, Gofannon, but the Foy Miore have not yet attacked.
Valar! Keranos! Goyim! It is time! It is time!
Gaynor is riding back to the gates!
Rannan! Arek! Sreng! It is time! It is time!
And Gaynor went riding through the ruined gates of Kaia Garenhir. His Golek crept behind him, thinking that he retreated.
For all that it shall be our only victory this day, I savor it greatly, my she-friend.
And now, we wait for the Foy Miore to come.
Aye.
Coram and Gafanon went out onto the battlements to wait and plan, but the Foy Miore did not come, though it began to grow dark.
Do you see any change, Coram?
No. The Foy Miore mist remains, and a few Golek are still milling here and there, mixing with the people of the Pines. But no sign that the Foy Miore are preparing to move.
They are unused to defeat. Perhaps they are debating what to do next.
Perhaps they recall the spear Brionac and the Black Bull of Crenanus, which defeated them once and slayed their comrade.
Perhaps, now that they have seen their vassals driven back, they have become fearful that another bull comes against them.
Just as they avoid Craig Doan, it is possible that they now avoid Kaer Malad because they associate it with defeat, and now consider avoiding Kaer Garenhir for the same reason. Whatever makes the Foy Miore remain upon the horizon, I do not care. I am glad for the reprieve.
Aye.
It gives the people of Garenhir time for the dead to be counted, the wounded tended, the old and the children hidden, and for the gates to be shored up as well as possible.
They are cautious, the Foy Miore. They are like cowardly carrion dogs. It is what has allowed them to survive so long, I think.
And Gaynor follows their example. As far as I know, he has no great reason to fear me, but it worked to our advantage this day. Yet the Foy Miore will come soon, I think.
I think so as well.
The she-smith stood beside Coram and sharpened the blades of his axe with the whetstone he carried, his great black brows drawn together.
Yet, do you see something which flickers close to the mist? And do you see a darker mist blending with that of the Foy Miore?
I saw it earlier, and I cannot explain it. I think it is some other Foy Miore tool which they shall send against us before long.
Ah! Here comes Ilbrek! Doubtless he saw that our battle went well, comes to join us again.
They watched the gigantic golden youth riding the proud black stallion towards them. Ilbrek was smiling, and he carried a sword in his hand.
Oh, that is not his usual sword. No, that he still wears on his belt.
And the sword he bears makes the sword at his belt seem crude and poor by comparison.
The sword in Ilbrek's hand blazed as brightly as the sun. Its hilt was all worked in fine gold, and there were jewels in it, and a pommel which glowed like a ruby, and yet was the size of Coram's head. Ilbrek tossed his braids and waved the sword high.
You were right to remind me of the weapons of light, Gafanon. I found the chest, and I found the sword. Here it is. Here is Retaliator, my father's sword with which he fought the Foy Miore. Here is Retaliator.
Ilbrek came closer to the walls, his huge head level with theirs as they stood upon the battlements.
But you came with it too late, Ilbrek. We have finished our fight now.
Too late? Did I not use the sword to draw a circle around the Foy Miore ranks so that even now they are confused, unable to move towards the city, unable to direct their troops?
So it was your work. You saved us after all, Ilbrek, when we thought you had deserted us.
Desert you? Leave what would be the last struggle between she and Foy Miore ever to take place. I would not do that, little Varak.
I know you would not, Ilbrek. Welcome back to us, and welcome too to the great sword Retaliator.
It still has all its powers.
Ilbrek turned the blade to make it blaze yet more brightly.
It is still the mightiest weapon ever drawn against the Foy Miore, and they fear it, Gafanon. I drew this burning circle around their poison mist, containing the mist and containing them at the same time, for they cannot move unless their mist moves with them. And there they stay.
Forever?
No, not forever, but for a while. And before we leave, I will draw a defense about Kaer Garenhir, so that the Foy Miore and their warriors will fear to attack.
We must go to King Daffin and interrupt his grieving, I fear. Time grows short if we are to save a Mergen's life, Gofanon. We need the golden oak and the silver ram.
Aye.
King Dafin raised his red eyes and looked upon Coram and Gafanon, who stood in the hall before him. A slender girl of little more than 16 summers sat upon the arm of the king's chair and stroked the king's head.
Your city is safe now, King Dafin, and will be so for some time. But now we ask a boon of you.
Go. I suppose that I shall be grateful to you later, but I am not grateful now. Please leave me. She warriors bring the Foy Miore upon us.
The Foy Miore marched before we came here. It was our warning that saved you.
It did not save my son.
It did not save my husband.
But other sons were saved, and other husbands. And more will be saved, King Dafin, with your help. We seek two of the Mabdon treasures. The Oak of Gold and the Ram of Silver. Do you have them?
They are no longer mine. And I would not part with them if they were.
These are the only things which will revive your archdruid American from the enchantment put upon him by the Foy Miore.
American? He is a prisoner in Caer Lued. Or dead by now.
No. American lives. Just. We saved him.
Did you?
King Dafin looked at the two with a different expression in his eyes. The despair seemed to fall away, as Foy Miore snow had melted when touched by the Black Bull's blood.
American lives and is free?
Aye.
Free? To guide us?
If we can get to Caer Malad in time, for that is where he is, at Caer Malad, but dying. The Oak and the Ram alone will save him. Yet if they are not yours, whom must we ask to give them to us?
They were our wedding gifts. They were the king's gifts to his son and me this morning, when Gwyn lived. You may have the Oak of Gold and the Ram of Silver.
American, our High King, restored to us. You say we had the means all along?
Aye, King Dafin, though I believe none knew that but American himself.
Here they are.
She opened the casket and revealed a model of a spreading oak tree, all worked in gold, and so fine as to seem completely real. And beside it rested the silver image of a ram, each curl of wool seeming to be set in relief by the craftsman who made it. A ram with great sweeping horns. A rampant ram whose silver eyes stared with a strange wisdom from the silver head. The maiden bowed her fair head and closed the lid of the casket and handed it to Coram.
They are yours. If any joy can come of them now, please take them.
Thank you, kind and fair lady. And thank you, King Dafin. And now we must go back to Caer Malad.
Tell American, if he revives, that we shall follow him in any decision he cares to make.
I will tell him.